And welcome to everybody to this Tech Talk, two-part Tech Talk on Internet Explorer 9 for developers and on HTML5 introduction. You're all part of an experiment here. It's always something good and something bad with that. My voice cannot be amplified in the room. I hope you hear me anyway, but we're doing a live transmission because we have many requests from people from Geneva, from Bern, who do not want to travel here for hours just to listen to Tech Talk, so we do broadcasting. For those on the broadcast, we are aware that the video quality is a very sharp, good picture, so you will be able to see code. But animations do not destroy your laptop or computer. It's not your computer's fault. We know animations are very slow. Regard them as kind of an art project. We are working on that. We know it. But for now, it's a technical limitation we still have. So I now introduce to you Internet Explorer 9, our new, wonderful, our web browser, latest generation. I like it, actually. I grew to like it. So we have two flavors for Internet Explorer 9. While we are before launch, we have a platform preview edition, which has no GUI. There's, if you want to open a page, you have to control Alt, and you get the dialog where you type URL, and you just see the result. It's just JavaScript and the rendering engine for you to measure the latest bits, to find out how the latest bits of the browser are actually working for your site. This is released, the advantage here is it's released with every 8 weeks. We've got very frequent updates. So we're already at the 9th or 8th release of this platform preview. But if you want to see the full browser, there was a beta. There is now a release candidate, only 2 releases, but this is the full browser GUI, and I'm going to use this release candidate for today's session. We are releasing shortly, so within the next month we expect to release, but of course you will see during the session that the standards we work with, HTML5 and all the other things I'm showing you, are totally in motion. They will change. And of course, having a constant update, being in a constant beta, for you as a user or a developer would be nice, because you would get updated versions of the browser fixing little bugs every now and then, every few weeks or months. That would actually, for me, in my heart, that would be the way I would want it. I would want a constant beta where I have the latest browser all the time. But of course, there are enterprises who want to do a rollout of the browser, test the browser, go through security certifications, test it with their internal intranet sites and projects. Then they get a green sign, and then they roll out among thousands of desktops. And for those, if we don't do a large release, it becomes a horror, because which of the beta versions that it's updated every 2 weeks are they going to start certifying, because certification takes much longer than and that's why. But I hope that you will see, it's not something I can promise, but I hope you will see future releases, short cycles releases after the launch tool, not just before the launch, showing you the path into the future of us supporting the evolving standards of HTML5. That sounds like I'm preaching here, but actually, that's why do we need a full release? So if you look at the GUI of the browser, I have screenshotted my wonderful blog here with the current versions or betas of the browsers, Safari, Opera, Firefox, Chrome, and Internet Explorer. And what you see, what's very nice to see, is that the browser itself doesn't take up much of the UI anymore. The browser itself becomes almost invisible and hidden. That's very nice. You could say, oh wow, right now we have the most pixels for the website. You see on top, we use the smallest portion for the browser Chrome. That's what it's called. It's not Google Chrome, but the browser Chrome, the browser UI. But this, of course, changes constantly. But right now, I think all the browsers are doing a very good job of being very much in the background and giving as much stage to your web page, and not to do many, many lines of codes and toolbars and add-ons and more toolbars and fan of toolbar, add-on toolbars. That was the past days. We only have one text box. We call it the smart box, smart bar. And it's basically, if you want to do a search, you just type the search query in here. If you want to navigate to a page, you just type the URL. And if you want to access your favorites or history, you start typing something you surfed to or you know has a title in your favorites, and the drop down box will automatically show you all the possible matches. Then when you start the browser and you have add-ons installed, every time you start the browser, it analyzes the startup speed and tells you, you have this add-on, I use 1Password, I love it, it's a password manager, not by Microsoft, but it's a very good one. and it takes a little while to start, but I don't care about that. I really like it. So these 0.24 seconds, I think I can wait these. But the browser really tells you nicely, for example, Bing Bar, right now it didn't take very long, but there's times when it takes very long, and then if you find an add-on that takes very long and keeps your browser from really starting up quickly, you can easily disable it in here or re-enable it later, and the browser keeps track on that. What takes my browser so long to start? Then all the dialogues are now not pop-ups anymore that obstruct your browsing experience, but they are shown in the bottom, like this download. You click on a download link, you see a yellow, it starts to flash if you ignore it for a while because it was a little unobtrusive. I myself was looking for this for a couple of seconds. Where is my download? And it was standing down here all the time. It starts flashing yellow now in the release candidate, and then you can choose to save it or run it right away. And there is a download manager that shows you all the downloads. Nice tool. It tells you what the downloads are, and if it thinks that one of your downloads might be dangerous because it's an executable that is not downloaded very frequently, it tells you and says, yeah, might be a bit cautious running that one, but basically it just helps your same knowledge a bit by not misclicking. And then it tells you, if you click on one of those, it tells you, do you want to delete it? It looks a little suspicious, or do you want to run it anyway? And then you run it anyway, as I do usually. So that's a bit of the user experience. I thought about doing a long user experience demo, but I'm not doing that. I think you're the smart guys in here. You'll either have seen this or will be up to speed in seconds. And I will now focus on the developer, really the developer elements. So one of the important things is same markup. The team that wrote Internet Explorer has one goal. Make HTML look the same in all browsers and not require any special code for Internet Explorer anymore so that web pages render correctly. That is the one big and I think very important goal we have. But still, if you look at the HTML specification, HTML5, but also other things, SVG, you will find that some of the specifications are very ambiguous. It doesn't tell you exactly. For example, one thing is a border with dotted borders. It doesn't tell, the specification doesn't say how big the dots are. It's just like, yeah, I'll make the border dotted. So every browser has its own way of rendering. So this is all the browsers rendering one and the same markup, but nobody told the makers how big those dotted borders should be, so they look a little different in every browser. This demo is online. You can look at it in the various browsers. So you can animate the border, show it, and animate the border radius, and then you run it in, for example, Chrome, and you will see that it animates. It looks different in the end a little bit. There is rendering differences, and that will be here for a long time, but the good news is everybody knows it, and everybody is working hard and together to make it look good in all browsers, for whatever. You don't have to write a page for a certain browser anymore. Goal is to write the web page and have it look okay in all the browsers. The other thing is, of course, we need a differentiator. What I told you now was how to be the same, so it wouldn't matter which browser you used anymore. It's great, no need for Internet Explorer. But then again, we want to have something which is different from the competition, and we try to do that through performance, and we use hardware acceleration. That's an advantage we have. We have the DirectX libraries on the computer. We can talk more or less directly to the GPU, to the graphics card, and use in the game rendering engine, the DirectX engine, to render animations, video, JavaScript output, and fonts. So we also, when you zoom fonts, scale fonts, or smooth fonts, we can use the hardware acceleration for that. And that we looked at, these are statistics from 5 top news sites, and we looked at these sites and said, hey, how long do they take to render standard content? And we found the rendering takes quite some time, it's the blue part on top, and The JavaScript actually takes quite some time too. So one new site took almost the whole time it took to render was JavaScript, and all the others had quite a big portion of JavaScript too. So we said, okay, we need a new JavaScript engine. And there is two paradigms in JavaScript engines. There is the interpreters that get the source code from the web page, then parse it, then run it through some optimization. We use the abstract syntax tree. I have put you a link, a very interesting article from Microsoft Research, how they speed up and compress the script itself using the abstract syntax tree. Then we generate bytecode and basically we interpret the JavaScript. The advantage here is it starts very fast. It doesn't take time to pre-compile anything. It basically, once it gets the script, it runs it instantly. And we do that on the main CPU, on the foreground UI thread. And then there is another paradigm, and it says you could also really pre-compile JavaScript into native code. Once you do that, the script runs much faster. Problem is, it takes quite some time to pre-compile. Now, if you have a very tiny script function that would be executed when interpreted in the blink of an eye, if you have a dump pre-compiler that pre-compiles everything, it takes like 10 times the whole execution for the whole pre-compilation to work, and then do that tiny little thing the script actually does, and then you lose time. It can make small scripts slower and long, big scripts a lot faster. So what we did, while we execute the script with an interpreter on the foreground UI thread, in the background thread, at the same time, we start compiling the script, but the script already runs. It's already being interpreted. And while that runs, the background compiler kicks in, compiles it to native code, and then the system decides, the Chakra JavaScript engine decides, should I switch over, or probably it will, switch over to the compiled version, native code version of the compiled script, because that then gets faster. So the script starts executing at normal interpretation power, and then the speed kicks in when compilation finishes. There is two sessions at PDC 2010, session recordings. I've given you the links here. That is are really, really good in watching. It's like we have level 1 through 400. It's like level 800. So I didn't understand everything in there, but it looked very promising. And everything, every time you don't understand something perfectly, or at least in my case, I think, okay, it must be good. They're really interesting, but quite technical. Another thing we added, that is, for now, it's Microsoft proprietary. We added into JavaScript itself a class called window.msPerformance. And it can be used as JavaScript execution time to measure page performance. At what millisecond count did it exactly start loading? How many milliseconds did it take to load? And what was the delta? So when did it finish, when did it start, and how long did it take? And you can create scripts in your web page that actually measure your page's performance. So you don't need third-party measuring tools, but you can output as part of your page, for example, when you're in debug mode of your page, how long it took for each step to render. The disadvantage is other browsers for now do not know MS Performance, but we are working now with the consortium, the World Wide Web Consortium, to get the MS Performance into a general window.performance class that all browsers, that will be standardized one day and all browsers can implement. Because I think it's very valuable for a developer if they can add performance measuring right into the page itself. So, if we look at a couple of small demos here, there is a page, it's a EA test drive, and there's quite a few tests in here, and one is the fish tank. I'm going to use that a couple of times today, but that's pure JavaScript rendering to the GPU. I know in the live meeting this must look very bad now. Imagine fish swimming around here very quickly, and you'll see that we're still running at 60 frames per second with 500 fish in our fish tank. Other browsers are starting too with hardware acceleration. But we have one advantage. We are not cross-platform with this browser. We run only on Windows, and we can go right onto the graphics hardware. So we will, in performance, I think we will have a little bit of a benefit. And other pages that are not by Microsoft, for Microsoft, this is the page done by BMW explaining their new car concept. And it's pure, it looks like Flash. So you can turn this car in real time. You can change to a night mode, should render the graphics a little better now. The car is a little blurry for now, but should get better. And this demo is actually done in full, and now it's done. So this demo is done in full HTML5, no Flash, no Silverlight. It's just canvas, animations, JavaScript, and here that is an example where hardware acceleration really helps. And if you want to look a little more into the MS performance, window.ms performance, also on our test drive site, we have a samples. You can look into the source code here and see the page measuring its own performance right within the page. So you don't have to rely on a third-party tool that monitors your browsers. When did it fire the? When did it start loading an element? When did it finish loading an element? But you can do it right off the page using JavaScript. I think that's quite interesting too. But this, for now, is Microsoft and Internet Explorer proprietary. So, developer tools. What do you as a developer get in tools when you use Internet Explorer 9? Let's look at a couple of these tools now. I'm opening a blank page here, and I'm going back to the eatestdrive.com to this page, and hopefully this loads. Come on, be a nice page. Sometimes it cannot, now it does. It has to find the proper URL. And now I'm getting a SVG demo, for example, SVG Helicopter. This is a little game. It's done in SVG. You fly a helicopter here, okay? And by pressing F12, you get the developer tools. And one interesting thing you have is if you look for a specific element on your page, you want to see, for example, let's look at, you click on this little arrow cursor, you switch to your page, and then you select any element on the page. And now the tool exactly shows you what part of the page have you selected, what CSS rules currently apply. If you have a cascading style sheet and some overriding others, you will see that, and the ones that are overridden are crossed out. And, for example, you can go here in real time and make this fill red. And once you hit enter, you will see that the color of the text has changed. So you can real time edit the page and look at elements and see how they influence each other. It's really good for real time debugging of content that is currently running. But, of course, that goes further. If we go back to our beloved fish tank, and we get ourselves 500 fish to swim around, we can now, in the profiler up here, we can say, start profiling. Now it measures the fish swimming around in our fish tank, and then I can stop profiling the page. Of course, you have full interaction in the browser while you profile, so you could start, load other pages, click on controls, navigate through the page, but now in this demo, of course, I want to measure the performance of the fish swimming. And here, for example, an interesting thing is the inclusive time of the function that takes the most time is this function draw, which actually draws my fish. This is very good. This is what I want. I go back to the profiler, but I find that already the third function here is in that's my swim. Let me see here. I wanted to show you a different one. Is it the anonymous function? That's the, okay. Already here you see the second most time spent function of this swimming fish is a little function that looks for window resize. So if you resize the window here, it will in real time re-render the whole GUI, and this takes up a lot of time, almost as much as the swimming fish themselves. So you might want to consider changing this code a little to get additional performance on this page. It's really good for real time finding what takes time in your running page. So let's look at another one, Facebook. No worries, I'm not going to update my status here. I'm doing a presentation. But in the debugger, I now see my Facebook page, and I also see all the other associated and loaded files, like all the JavaScripts that are loaded here. And as you know, many of the JavaScripts you load, or some of them that you produce yourself, you compress them to save download time. But debugging a compressed script is far from beautiful. If we have to debug this script, I think we'll go berserk. So we have a function in here called format JavaScript. And it will take the script and within seconds, or a millisecond, create a really well-readable version of this very JavaScript for debugging. I think that's a real, real good feature that helps you debug. Also, if you think that you're loading a third-party clip, like jQuery, you have a minimized version of jQuery, and you really want to debug into jQuery and see how it works, that helps a lot. Otherwise, it's undebuggable. So, another one I want to have a quick look at. Let's go to Ricardo. And now, I want to start the network capturing. So I go to network and I start capturing. And now I look for something and I find some offers. Probably not a real car here. Oh, that is a real car. I can expense it because I did a demo here. So now I stop my network capture and now I see a detailed view of every single element when it was loaded, how long it took to render. And for example, let's pick, maybe we'll find an image here or a Java or a PNG here. And the interesting thing is you can go down to even look at the initiator who caused this picture to be loaded. And here you find, for example, speculative parsing. That means once the page starts loading, it pre-parses all the HTML it gets, and then it starts preloading images. It's not even sure if it's ever going to render them, but it does. It has some time, so it starts pre-fetching, speculative pre-fetching of images or content. And that can greatly, of course, change the performance and tell you what exactly happened and what took time loading your page with the timing graphs here that you can see exactly when was it started, how long did it wait, how long did it have to wait from start of loading until this element got loaded, and then this was an okay loading, I think. And the other thing that's interesting, you can now go back to summary view, and you can save or export, let me see, here, save button, and now I call it network data XML. I save the whole trace here as an XML file. And now, if I open Fiddler, another networking, third-party networking tool, we're working together very closely. So you can now load the archive, say that you are working with, let's go into, and get my network data XML. Oh, isn't it an archive file? Import sessions. I'm sorry, I was too quick here. It's an XML file here, and now I load the session I recorded earlier, and now I can analyze this very session in Fiddler. So you'll see once this format gets adopted, you will be able to save your traces, share them with others. They can use other tools to analyze them, to look at different angles. I think this is also for debugging your web pages. This is a very valuable tool. So, another one, you want to test a mobile page. So, you have Cinema, and you want to see how this would render on an iPhone. What you can do now is you take the browser user agent string of the iPhone here. That's what the iPhone sends when it talks to web page and says, this is who I am. And in the debugger, you can now go to Tools, change user agent string custom, and you say, I'm an iPhone, and this is my user agent string. Add. Okay. And now, when I look, I'm here in this page, I now tell that I'm an iPhone, and the page, when I reload it, it will reload in the mobile version, because the page now thinks I'm hitting it with an iPhone. This can be very valuable too if you want to test your mobile pages on a desktop browser. Being able to edit the user agent string, very useful. So let me go back to the default one, otherwise I'll have some weird stuff happening in my later demos. I'm always hitting the pages with an iPhone. And these are just a few basic concepts and tools of the browser that it offers to developers for real-time page debugging and analysis. So let me quickly talk about one thing. If you write a page and you want to find out if you have to do something to be properly rendering in IE, Internet Explorer, the classic way is to do browser detection. So you tell your page, find out if you're running on IE, and if, then use this script or use this HTML. That's a very classic way. The other way is doing feature detection. Basically, it's doing a little script, running a little script, detecting one certain feature. Is it available? And if it's available, then you use the feature. In the next part of the page, you do the same thing again. You run another little script saying, hey, can I use the, this CSS feature, is it supported, or is this JavaScript feature supported? And when it does, you use it, or you fall back if it doesn't. The advantage, of course, is that in a well-known browser configuration, you know exactly current release IE8, and I know I have a problem, so if IE8 hits the page, I'm going to render this. It's much less code to write for you, but if you're in an unknown browser, changing browser configuration, so the page you wrote for IE8 may have a problem, because when somebody with IE9 hits your page, it detects IE, says yes, it's Internet Explorer, and it delivers some workaround code that IE8 or 7 or 6 needed. But IE9 tries to get rid of all the old workarounds and really supports the standard HTML. So even if you had the proper code for let's say, Firefox on your page, you wouldn't run it, because in the browser detection, you channeled everybody to the old code that would work well on IE7 or something. And if you use feature detection, even if a browser comes along that you don't expect, you test each single feature, and when the browser does it, when it's able to do it, you then use it. And then you may render properly on future browsers that you don't even know today. And feature detection, one thing more, just this slide for you as a little text, not just my graphics, but one interesting thing too is always, if you do feature detection, always detect for standards first, and then go for legacy code. Because many browsers that does support standards also supports legacy, and if you test for legacy first, you'll serve them legacy and not the standard that it actually could do. And it sounds very complicated, but it's actually not. So the old world, you said if IE, that was a special conditional comment that IE used in the earlier days, or if unique objects. If you have the attach event, then it must be not IE, or you used bugs, or if you want to use browser detection, always detect for a specific version. So if IE 7, then this would not render true if it was IE 8 or IE 9 or maybe one day even IE 10. So if a certain specific version of a browser, you can use browser detection. Feature detection, what you do is you try to use a function like in this if statement. If window.addEventListener, if that fails or doesn't return true, then the browser can't do it. So the addEventListener is not supported. Then down here you have an alternative, a fallback. But up here, if it does it, if it can do it, then use it. And there is a couple of tools like Modernizer. It's a JavaScript library you can use in your own project that does that for you. So if you link Modernizer into your project, you have a lot of Modernizer function and tell Modernizer, I want to use Canvas. And Modernizer takes care of either telling you, yes, you can use Canvas in this browser, or no, you can't, but I have a workaround for you. So it mimics the feature that you're missing with old browser workarounds. It's not a shim, so it's not like the Chrome frame that actually shows Internet Explorer but doesn't then use Internet Explorer for rendering, but it's a real workaround, and you don't have to write it. You basically can then start using the element, and Modernizer and takes care of compatibility. The other thing that's good is this works very well in JavaScript. It works very well too in markup. So we'll see that in the HTML5 demo. When you, for example, use an HTML5 video and you tell which video you want to play, the source, and the player can't play this video, it will go down to the next thing it finds inside the object or inside the video tag, which is this text called download video and then a link. So the people who have a browser that can render HTML5 video will see the video, and people who don't, they will see a text saying download video and a link. That's a fallback within HTML. Or a fallback within CSS. If a browser already supports the border radius property for rounded borders, it will execute this and stop here. If it doesn't, it will go further. If it's Mozilla, there's a workaround or a WebKit workaround for border radius, and then it will pick the one, basically, that it understands. If it, however, runs out, it doesn't know this one, or this one, let's say IE7 or IE8, it will just not do it. It will just say, I would love to, but I have no clue what they mean with border radius. So that's just a little. There's also, in the link section, is a very long, or almost 1.5 hour session on this topic exclusively. I think that's a very, very important thing to keep in mind. Get away from browser detection, go to feature detection. Actually, one thing that made me find out about this was I was told about a very, very cool demo of a JavaScript statistics rendering engine from somebody. This is the live URL from somebody in Iola.Denmark, but it just doesn't render in IE9. And then I thought, so let's look at the debugger, and let's do script real-time debugging. So real-time debugging actually runs the page, and like Visual Studio stops on an error. And it says here, this is something I can't parse. And I found out if the browser is MSIE, Internet Explorer, then run this code that is broken. Actually, the code works on IE8, but IE9, being more standards-based, doesn't run this legacy expression here. So once I tell Internet Explorer to stop debugging, once I tell Internet Explorer here that it is to be using the Firefox, just identify yourself as Firefox when loading the page. And now I start debugging, and I reload the page, everything renders properly. IE9 can load this page, but it will fail if you just detect for IE and then say, ooh, it must be in the IE6 or something ugly, so we'll give them that down-level code that they use to support. It's not this guy's fault. It's our fault because we used to not support standards, but some weird workarounds in the past. But it can break a working page that would render nicely on IE9 if you just do browser detection. So, okay. And I have to go back here to my default. Okay. So, if you know your page needs a down-level browser, if you wrote something, some old code, you can tell the whole page or the whole site to render like IE7 or IE8. You do that by including a string either in the HTTP header or in the web.config file, and then when the browser, it's a meta tag. So it's ignored by all browsers that don't like it or don't need it. It's very standards compliant, but if IE sees this, IE9, and you tell, please emulate IE7 for this page, then it will render as IE7 would have rendered this page. So, now, something very new. To add a little more to the coolness of Internet Explorer 9, we added a new feature that I think is very, very cool for developers. Basically, it allows you with a couple of lines of code to customize the whole browser to your site. So Blick did this. If you look at the Blick page, you see that the buttons are red, the back and forward buttons. The Blick logo here is on the browser itself. And you see the Windows taskbar here. You see special links and menus that Blick offers for you if you want to start a new session on Blick. So if I go to blick.ch, you'll see the normal Blick rendering. The browser looks like every day, normal, nothing customized. But now if I pull the icon here down to my menu bar, it will now be the Blick customized browser, and right-click menu offers me quite a few direct links to Blick subsites, even if the browser is not running. So if this is closed, and I'm going to my taskbar, you see these available, even if the Blick site is not running. And to do this, what you, of course, you first need is a nice favorite favicon, favorite icon in various resolutions, up to 64 by 64 pixels. So when I heard that, I thought, okay, it's a feature I can't use because I, in my whole life, I haven't found a usable icon editor. And then I looked at Visual Studio and I thought, okay, I haven't found a usable icon editor. So, but somebody saw the problem and created an HTML5 web-based icon editor, and it's very powerful at importing your existing imagery. Let me just go to temp here. I'm sure I have it in the different other folder. Sorry about that. So I upload a PNG. It can have transparency. Then I resize here my TechDays 11 logo. And you see that TechDays font down here would get too small. So I don't render the small versions. Okay? But I will import a second logo for the small version. So it's a TechDays image without the font, the white font on top for those two small resolutions. Okay? Now I have four icons in here with the TechDays logo. This one is already debatable. I can't read TechDays, but I can guess. But this is readable. So if I preview this, it will show you how your favicon will look in this case, in the integration with IE9. But, of course, you can use this favicon with every browser and every operating system. It just shows you all the extra features. Once you like this, you export it, you download it, and then you basically see the downloads box down here. You save it, and now you have the favicon.icon on your hard disk. And now, the first thing you do to your page is adding some meta packs. This is basically, if you do this, you're already done. Then afterwards, I'll show you a couple of extras you can do. But by doing this, you already have the beautiful integration in the taskbar, and all this, the extra menus, all you saw from Blick before, is already there, with a couple of meta tags and a favicon. So, I start my currently favorite, I change favorite HTML editors like I change underwear. So right now I use WebMatrix a lot, but I also use Visual Studio and Notepad. I haven't found my, I know there's also Expression Web, but so I open one of my sites. I have a demo site here, and I run this site here. Interesting is, for all the browsers you have installed on your system, it's able to render that page right into that browser. But for now, this is the IE9 feature. So here is my page. If I take this page and drag it down to my start menu, not much will happen. So this is the unchanged experience here. It's a default icon and no extra menus. Unpin. Okay. So let's now start to edit this. First thing I need is these meta tags. They're very, very few. They're basically very well readable. They just tell you what is the link's name, what is its URL, and what is the icon to be shown. What is the favicon, where is it located, and that's all. Once you have this in, you save, you reload your page, you should already see the favorite icon show up. Oh, let me unpin quickly, unpin. Close. A little bit sometimes. Yeah, now I have the unbranded browser again. The normal browser, no special icon, no special colors. I drag this down. And now I get the branded browser with the special colors here. I could also choose. And this browser actually runs in a separate process. So if I have IE9 open a couple of times here, I go to Google. Should be Bing, but who cares? I go to YouTube. Of course, you know, these browsers all stack down here. But your page has its own icon. And if you go into a new tab, you'll get new tabs under this page. So it's like its own application. It runs in its own process. It has its own icon, its own menu, its own features. Somebody who really visits your site a lot, Blick, I think, is a good example. Somebody goes back there every day. This can be a very, very good add-on. It's for meta tags. And you can get people a lot closer to your browser. Now, a good question is, how the hell would somebody on this planet find out that they can drag this icon from the toolbar into their taskbar? Maybe somebody who studied Internet Explorer in a university could do that, but probably other normal human beings won't ever find that. And it's true. I do admit that is true. But, thanks to modern science, wrote a little JavaScript, that basically, you should say, ooh, browser detection now, because it actually does browser detection, the thing I just told you not to do. But this is an init app. It's a little JavaScript I run on load, when the page loads. And it basically says, hey, if your IE9, or to see it a little better, I have it down here. If your IE9, and exactly IE9, not 8, not 7, not 10, not 12, and you are not already in pin site mode, then find a certain div called pin.me and fill this div with an image and add a couple of click event handlers to it. And that's all. That's all. And you see I have a try catch error handler in the beta. It used to fire an error every time. It used to work perfectly, but still fire an error. So in the beta time frame, it was needed to have a try-catch block. Now in the release candidate, that problem has gone away. But having a try-catch block never hurts. So you never know. So now the effect of this is that once I save this and reload my page, if it finds I'm in IULA, let's go back to my default and not to the JavaScript. Otherwise, it tries to run the JavaScript, which is not that nice. So let's see if we can get this to work. So now it tells you, hey, drag me to your taskbar to get extra features or click to install me. If I run this in Firefox, come on, Firefox, be quick. Firefox will never see this. That's exactly the expected behavior. And once this finishes synchronizing my bookmarks, once I pull this down and pin it, it will go away too, because now it is IE9, but it is already pinned. So it will not show up again. That's very nice, unobtrusive way of showing your people, I have this feature, why won't you try it? But it doesn't really block your whole site. I think that's a very good way of getting this information to your people. Once you have this, you basically already, with a couple of lines of scripts and meta tags, you're on the page of your frequent user. Really, I think that's really easy to do. So, let's go back to our code. What could we do more? Of course, these are a little static. You see, these are parsed once the page is loaded. You can change them, of course, if you load the page. But once the page is loaded, this menu is cached on the computer always, if your site is running or not. But once your site is up and running, you can create another category of elements in your menu that you update dynamically. Even if the page is running, it can change. Like, you're running a little email client, web-based email client, and if you have a new mail, you show it in here, or you have a reminder, and it can come, show up, even if it has been running for 2 hours already. To do that, what you need in code is, I have cheated a little bit. I'm doing it basically in my demo. I'm doing it on a click event. I'm not using a timer, or I don't have many new articles, but what I do in my code here is, for every page, once it's loaded, when it's loaded, I find what are the articles. You saw the page is divided in articles. And for every article, I get its link, I get its header, and I create entries in that content list using script. So it's quite a simple one here. So, of course, what I need to do is on my... Now we need this, if we're running Internet Explorer, if we are in site mode, we can reuse this. This is the initial script that does the detection. Are you in site mode or not? Should I show that? Pull me into the start menu. So here I say window.onFocus. And here I say equals add local jump list. So I, on every single load of the page, when I am in IE9 and already in site mode, quite important, so that other browsers or IE9, if it's not pinned to the taskbar or start menu, doesn't get this, but only people who have it pinned get this. So I save my page, I reload it, let me find it quickly. Apologies to all on the live meeting who only see jabbering page refreshes now. But now you see I have three articles in here. I right click and I see all of these three articles as hyperlinks in my custom menu. I change a page to videos and it automatically updated these links to be the, so the middle one is actually is a video. I click it, I'm already right in that article or video. So you can, but it's purely optional, add custom items and menus to that right mouse button menu. Thank you, Mike. Mike just showed me his 10 fingers. I think he told me you'll get punched when this is over. Or he said you have 10 more minutes to live. So this feature adds dynamic menus to your jump list. Another one, Facebook uses this very prominently. If you have, but important, the page needs to be open and running, otherwise it doesn't work. But if you have the page open, let's say you have Facebook pinned to your start bar, it actually works very nicely. And I actually have a reminder, maybe it will work right away. I add Facebook. It should, you see, it should show me. Okay, that's luck, but it works very nicely now. It shows a red star, but only if the page is currently open. But that in Facebook is perfect because it's open all day, it's somewhere in the background, hidden behind the email in case the boss walks by. And somebody writes something, and I see a little red icon overlay, and I know, oops, something happened. I got a mic posted on my wall. You have 10 minutes left for your speech, or I'll punch you. Okay. So to do that, what you need, again, is a little bit of script that you use to load an image. You say where an icon, you have an icon. The icon normally has lots of transparency and only a little addition because it will be overlaid onto the already existing icon. So this is an all transparent icon with just the red circle and the white star. And it will be loaded on top, and you can also clear all, so they will be, you can even layer them, you could do some graphical effects, and you can say clear, and it will remove all overlays except for the basic favicon. If we apply that to our page, there is a notify icon function here. Let me just put it in here. I just load this notification icon, and here in the default page, I have a link, and when I click this link, it will basically fire this notify icon. Of course, that's not the way you would do it. You would use JavaScript to find out from client side to ask the server, has something happened periodically, and then if something did happen, your information would be available. You would then dynamically overlay. But for a demo, I think this should be quite okay. I save it all. Save. Did I add a map? Should be good. This S will not be tolerated. So I reload my page. I go into my main page, and once I click the sample alert, you will see the little yellow star popping up down here. So it's just the overlay got loaded and shown on top of the icon. It's really the more complex part here is to create the client-side JavaScript that asks your server for something new, and then once the page has been running for a couple of minutes already, suddenly pop up that icon. So I want to go here. Okay. Now, the most complicated in scripts, but also I think quite cool feature is you can, in the thumbnail preview of the open window of Internet Explorer, but of course these are all optional. If you have media for playback, audio, video or something, or also your own functions, you can add icons or buttons here dynamically or remove them. It takes a little bit of script, but in my case, I wanted to have for my video player, so in videos, I have this video, HTML5 video that plays. And once I hover here, I would like, I'm not even sure if that works. Now I'm not having AeroGlass turned on. Let's see how this renders if AeroGlass is off. Because if Windows 7 has AeroGlass turned on, you see the preview of the current window. Let's see how this renders. I haven't tried that. We are not using AeroGlass now for the live meeting. So let's see how this renders. That's a good one, a new one. And the code you need for that is basically down here. It's quite a simple function. Go back to my web matrix project and my add buttons, I replace, and of course, I have to add my buttons in code too. So in my function here, up here, the first thing I want to do is if a page loads new, I want to clear window.external.ms site mode clear icon overlay. So you'll notice that the little star here never went away because we never cleared it. I will trigger that now on loading the page. And here, down here, is we will run the add buttons function that we just added. And looking at this add buttons function, you will get this code after the session. It basically checks, is there an HTML5 video tag on the page? If not, nothing to be done. If there is, find the first video and basically play, show these buttons and add event handlers for the click event that basically pauses or plays the video based on the current state of the video. It's not that complicated, but it takes a little bit of thinking to get it running. So here, now, I should get, but they need, they require error glass. So, believe your try it at home. Once you have the web page preview, you will see the buttons, but in this, without Windows 7, I didn't know that. Oh, did I miss something? Thanks. Is it one or two? Thanks. So that's the best IE9 live debugger. It's an audience. Actually, you are right. You're right. So let's see, maybe it does work. Yeah, I get the button. But so the second best debugger is F12 and the best is an audience. Or you guys. So now, I get this button that allows me to play and pause video from the, of course this is a little bit exotic, but it can be done. And you see I'm not changing the icon here. It's always the play button. You could change this code. Here I have a sample, you'll get this too, that uses styles and then replaces the style based on is it currently playing, then the style should be the pause button, or is it currently paused, then the style should be the play button. It's a little more complexity here, but it's basically the same result. So I think I can do that, or I should be able to. I don't think this is going to work. Let's see. Let's see. So now, play and pause buttons. It's just styling, loading different images, PNGs based on the current state, and then applying them in the event handler. It's just a little addition to even change the buttons on the fly. I think you can have up to 5 buttons here. It will push out to the left the last buttons you add. So, interesting feature, but probably not for most sites. And that is these features that you can add to your site, specifically if it runs IE9, but I think that the work to do it, basically a couple of meta tags on the favicon, is already quite a game for the site, and all other browsers will not be disturbed by a few meta tags. If you added these scripts, of course, you will need to check, is it really IE9? Otherwise, other browsers will choke on the scripts. But I think it's a very good thing to add to your site if you have frequent visitors to your site. So here are a few of the links I've shown you. I've added other links right into the slide, and you will get the slide deck after this presentation.